Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a repeat of history, as the neoconservatives who brought us the Iraq fiasco are apparently manufacturing another case for war, this time with Iran. Jeremiah Gulka, a specialist on the politics and policy of U.S. national and homeland security, joins us. He was sent to Iraq by the Bush administration to investigate the State Department-designated terrorist organization Mujahideen al-Haq, the MEK, who the neocons are now using as a source of intelligence to build a case for war against Iran. Then we will speak with author and historian Kevin Baker about his essay in the New York Times Sunday Review, The Outsourced Party, which explains the strategy and mechanism behind the Republican Party's drift towards right-wing radicalism and the extent to which, through their interlocking networks of billionaire-funded think tanks, media propaganda outlets, and judicial activists on the Supreme Court, they are carrying the country with them. Then finally, as some 70 Western and Arab foreign ministers meet in Turkey with the Syrian opposition to forge some unity and respond to the Syrian regime's foot-dragging on the UN Arab League's peace proposal, we will discuss alternative approaches with Henri Barki, a former member of the State Department's policy planning staff. He has a recent op-ed in the New York Times, in the Los Angeles Times, Syria in the Balance. If the international community wants to stop the bloodshed and prevent disasters, it needs to act rather than react. Joining us now is Jeremiah Gulka, a writer and public policy analyst who specializes in the politics and policy of U.S. national and homeland security. From 2007 to 2010, he was an analyst at the RAND Corporation, where he conducted research for the U.S. military. He was the lead author of The Mujahideen al-Haq in Iraq, a policy conundrum. A member of the RAND team, he was also a member of the RAND team that helped end Don't Ask, Don't Tell, a staffer on the Congressionally Mandated Military Leadership Diversity Commission, and an attorney with the U.S. Department of Justice. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeremiah Gulka.
Thanks for having me.
And just tell us about your trip to Iraq back in, in the introduction, I suggested that that to some extent we've seen this movie before with Chalabi and the use of the bogus intelligence that he generated along with the neoconservatives who were pushing the agenda. All of that's pretty clear on the record. And in fact, there was quite a bit of tension between Chalabi and the State Department and the CIA. And during that time, you were sent to Iraq, during the war, you were sent to Iraq to look into the State Department designated terrorist group, the MEK, and their activities on the Iran-Iraq border. But it feels in many ways like we've seen this movie before. And as much as the MEK seemed to be involved in generating intelligence on what's going on inside of Iran, that's being used by the same people who brought us the Iraq War, not surprisingly, some of us have some qualms or suspicions about that. So, I guess I've set the context. Go ahead and tell us about, one, whether you accept that premise, and two, your trip to Iraq to look into the MEK.
Looking at the MEK, there are a lot of strands that are hard to unravel. There's a lot of kind of confused information out for two reasons. One is that the MEK, through its political arm, which is called the National Council of Resistance for Iran, with NCRI, which is also listed as part of the MEK as a foreign terrorist organization, they do a very good job of presenting themselves as being a pro-Western liberal democracy organization. So it has sort of a touchy-feely approach that some people have jumped into supporting because it sounds good to them in a sort of the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of way, just as the same thing has been said about Chalabi lots of times. And again, another mantra goes along with that, which is what looks good to be true probably isn't. What I was sent to Iraq to look at was when I was at the RAND Corporation, we had a client, which was the Detaining Operations Command of the Coalition Forces in Iraq, which was formed after the Abu Ghraib scandal came out and the military decided to take a little bit more control over what was happening in the detainee camps. The RAND project was largely to help them release detainees, so that was a good thing. My bit was a subpart, which was to look at the U.S.'s sort of weird dalliance with the MEK in Iraq, where there was a sort of detention set up. The group was consolidated at its largest of its several camps in Iraq, Camp Ashraf. And so my job was to help figure out what some of the legal issues were there, how to help resolve the question of where should these 3,400 members of the MEK go, since Iraq didn't want them to stay, and then provided some background about the group. And so now the State Department is with the UN Human Rights Commission is in the process of implementing the recommendations and trying to get some resolution regarding the people there. So when looking at the MEK issues these days, there are kind of multiple strands. You have one issue, which is dealing with the people who are in Iraq, and then you have the issue of the folks trying to get in the U.S., trying to get off the foreign terrorist organization list. And then you have the question of the former official, U.S. former officials who are lining up behind the MEK to help get them off of the foreign terrorist organization list and also to promote war, or at least the threat of war with Iran.
Well, these former, a lot of them are prominent officials in the George W. Bush administration. They're not just trying to help the MEK get off the terrorist designated list, but they're also accepting, fairly generous lecture fees from the MEK, who seem to be well funded. These are figures like Tom Ridge, the first head of Homeland Security, Francis Townsend, Attorney General Michael Mukasey, UN Ambassador John Bolton, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, former Democratic Governors Ed Rendell and Howard Dean, ex-FBI Director Louis Free, and retired Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Hugh Shelton. Jeremiah Gugger, for people who don't know about the MEK and their importance and relationship to both Iran and Iraq, and why they became a resistance group within Iran during and after the Islamic Revolution that brought the Ayatollah Khomeini. They were headquartered inside Iraq under the protection of Saddam Hussein, and they've launched terrorist attacks inside Iran for since the revolution. And then, of course, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, a simple way of looking at it is they were founded by a graduate student at the University of Tehran in 1965 to oppose the Shah. They participated in the Iranian Revolution, and when they weren't able to actually take some office during it, they changed their focus to be the Ayatollah Khomeini's regime. And since then, their goal has been to take down that regime, become the new regime themselves, and they signed up with Saddam Hussein to help that cause, which ended up being probably their biggest mistake, because now they're widely hated in Iran for having fought against Iran. And now they're trying to get the U.S. to basically bring the military force behind them and install them in the government.
Well, how much are they being used by the U.S. In their covert war against Iran, and more importantly, I guess, the Israeli covert war against Iran that's even more intense?
Right. In terms of the U.S. use of it, that's sort of vague. I don't have a very good impression of exactly what's going on. There's been lots of rumors. It's, of course, highly classified type stuff. There's been lots of rumors. And depending on people that politics and position in government, their attitude towards MEK may vary. Some of the neoconservatives definitely have seen them as a potential ally. There are statements by Rumsfeld and Cheney back in, 2003 when they were thinking about the on to Tehran approach of using the MEK as kind of bullet catchers essentially in the process of if they were going to go invade Iran at the time. The rumors continue. As far as Israel, as you know, it's been all around the news since NBC broke the stories of unnamed sources in the U.S. government saying that Israel is indeed using the MEK to do covert actions in Iran now. So I haven't seen a lot more follow-up on that story.
Well, what about the intelligence angle, though, Jeremiah Gorka, in terms of the Chalabi, of course, was promoted heavily by the neoconservatives, even though he ended up being an agent for Iran. And even when George W. Bush was told that Chalabi was an agent for Iran and that he disclosed to the Iranian regime that the existence of a national security agency intercept or bugging of all Iranian diplomatic communications, enabling the Iranians to change their codes. The U.S. was listening into their mail. Bush was incredibly furious, but it took a while to get rid of the through the Pentagon. They dragged their heels, kept supporting Chalabi. So that's in itself an amazing story.
But it's absolutely appalling. And I think you're hitting on one of the real parallels here between the MEK and Chalabi. You know, it's not just that they're pretending to be a widely supported, proto-liberal democratic regimes, potential regimes to come bring democracy to to Iraq and then Iran. You're talking about dubious intelligence. The MEK presents itself as being this wonderful source of intelligence to about Iran because it has its network of people in Iran. When I spoke with intelligence people, officials, when I was doing my RAND research on the report, I got mixed reviews. Some people said nonsense intelligence. Some people said, sure, maybe, but you need to corroborate that for it to be quality intelligence. Other times they said, well, yeah, okay, we know what you're telling us is true because we already know it. And then they still proclaim that they're bringing in new and valuable intelligence. I think what we're really seeing is what makes the news are the things that the MEK is putting into the news, which then suits interest of neoconservatives and other folks who want to have war with Iran. So, for instance, the Iranian nuclear program is largely in the news because the MEK had a press conference in 2005 announcing the Natanz nuclear facility. And they've been waving the flag of fear about the nuclear program ever since. Now, people looking into the source of this intelligence think that it actually came from Israel and that Israel is putting effort into trying to get this news into the U.S. public to steer politics, and that the MEK was the first group that said, sure, we'll do it. We'll put it into the news.
The MEK itself, now it's amazing that they've survived, particularly after U.S. invasion of Iraq and then installing this Maliki government that's so clearly allied with Iran. They've got to be pretty insecure, and they were at one point surrounded and disarmed, I believe. I don't know what their current status is in Iraq. They're very active over here. Years ago, they tried to kind of recruit me. Decades ago, they seem to have a lot of money. Where do they get their money from? And isn't it a kind of a cult-like operation? I believe Bunny Sider's sister was involved with them. So can you flesh that out for us?
Sure. The first short response is to where does the money come from? That's sort of the big question, and that's what the Treasury Department is currently investigating. They've subpoenaed a couple dozen of the former officials, including the ones you listed, who have been taking $10,000 to $20,000 to $30,000 per speech to speak on behalf of the MEK to promote them and to suggest that they should be removed from the Foreign Terrorist Organization list. Saddam is reputed to have given them a lot of money when the leader, Mariam Rajavi, was arrested in Paris in 2003. Several million euros were found in her home or office, which was arrested. They have money, but again, the question is exactly where is it coming from? And because they're on the FTO list, the money that they use or get has to be laundered, and so it all becomes quite criminal operations. As to the group becoming a cult, well, what happened when the MEK leadership left Iran? They're basically exiled when Khomeini's regime started suppressing them brutally. they ended years later in 1986. They end up in Iraq, setting up with Saddam's help to participate in the Iran-Iraq War. And Saddam gives them money in exchange for intelligence and translation skills, and participation in the Iran-Iraq War.
And interrogation of Iraqi prisoners too, right?
Of Iranian prisoners.
Iranian prisoners. Yeah.
And well, now they're out in the desert, and they're having a hard time getting new recruits. Just about a year before they moved to Iraq, the leader of the MEK, his name is Masoud Rajavi, he arranges a divorce from his wife, who was Bonnie Sauter's sister, marries enforces a divorce, and then marries the wife of one of his chief colleagues on the MEK, who is Miriam Rajavi. The two of them become the co-leaders of the organization, and they turn it into a cult of personality. And so what you've seen in Iraq is a cult group that is absolutely not promoted in their daily life towards values that we would associate with Western-type human rights or liberal democracies. Instead, we've seen brainwashing, control, sleep deprivation, sexual control, emotional isolation, and a host of basically human rights types violations that I reported on in the RAND report that you mentioned, and Human Rights Watch published a report in 2005 discussing. And so these are things we largely learned from former members who've talked about their experiences, and through trying to triangulate and corroborate different stories we've heard from different former members that I interviewed or read reports from, and the Human Rights Watch interviewees. It's somewhat chilling.
So, Jeremiah Gorka, the MEK is very active over here in the United States. Obviously, they've been spending, $30,000 per lecture fee on people like Tom Ridge, former Homeland Security Advisor, ahead, Francis Townsend, Attorney General Michael Mukasey, U.S. UN Ambassador John Bolton, Rudy Giuliani, Governors Rendell and Howard Dean, ex-FBI Director Louis Free, and retired Chairman of the Joint Chiefs General Hugh Shelton. Many of those people, were involved with the Bush administration's war in Iraq. What is the extent of their network over here? And again, we don't know where they get their money from, but they run a very slick PR campaign, and they're trying to get themselves off the terrorist list. What do you know about their traction within the Iranian-American community?
It's hard to tell, because they are really good at AstroTurf campaigns, fake grassroots campaigns. They have all sorts of front organizations in the U.S., they probably deny that they're front organizations. They say that they independently are supportive of the MEK, at least in order to get around the material support of terrorism laws. When they have protests, they often will have big demonstrations or protests, but some of those have been shown to just include people that they've bussed in from different church groups and different organizations without saying exactly who or what it's for. Often just bussing folks in saying, do you support democracy or in the Middle East or in Iran? And people say, sure, and thanks for the bus fare. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get the sense of exactly how truly robust their support is in the U.S. Now, the people who do support them support them very intensely, but how many of them is really an open question.
Well, also, the final question would be, and why do they do so, knowing that what an unsavory group they are? It seems like an exercise in kind of cynical realpolitik. Is that if that's the best that we've got in terms of agents inside Iran, it doesn't speak well what about the Green Movement? What about the thousands and millions of Iranians that rose up against the regime? Why are we dealing with these murderous thugs and not dealing with those people?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, so when you talk about the support in the U.S., you have, I think, some authentic sort of volunteer or cult member type members of the MEK, and then you have the the cynical political people who want to have, who are interested in having war with Iran or promoting even the threat of it, and so therefore they use this particular group to promote fear of Iran and make it seem like a much greater threat than it is. And, you know, to loop it back to Chalabi, the journalist Ali Gharib wrote an article on the Loeb blog September 10th of 2010 that specifically ties the supporters for the MEK with Ahmed Chalabi, even down to links that come down to a house in Virginia where some of the same people are operating, the same operations are supported Chalabi, and now they're working on behalf of the MEK because they wanted war in Iraq and now they're wanting war in Iran.
Well, thank you very much for joining us here today, Jeremiah Gorka.
Thanks so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Jeremiah Gorka, a writer and public policy analyst who specializes in the politics and policy of U.S. national and homeland security. From 2007 to 2010, he was an analyst at the RAND Corporation, where he conducted research for the U.S. military. He was the lead author of the Mujahideen al-Haq in Iraq, a policy conundrum, a member of the RAND team that helped end Don't Ask, Don't Tell, a staffer on the Congressionally Mandated Military Leadership Diversity Commission, and an attorney in the U.S. Department of Justice. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the Republican right-wing radical machine that appears to be taking over America.
I can see by your eyes you must be lying when you think I don't have a clue. Baby, you're crazy. If you think that you can fool me, because I've seen